All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Rinkwide Vancouver. The Vancouver Canucks come up with one of their biggest wins of the season. They needed overtime, but they get the job done 2-1. They defeat the Los Angeles Kings and go 2-for-2 to start this quick three-game road trip through the Pacific Division. This is Rinkwide Vancouver. Jeff Patterson joined once again by Irfan Ghaffar. We're coming to you from our studio in the lower level of the Wall Center Hotel. If you're looking for meeting or conference space in downtown Vancouver, the Wall Center offers 30 unique event rooms, from small conference rooms to the grand ballroom to the Constellation floor, 34 stories above the city, with incredible views and an outdoor patio space. Consider the Wall Center for all of your conference and events needs. Email them, sales@wallcenter.com. Bit of a sluggish start for the Vancouver Canucks, and once the LA Kings got the 1-0 lead, you wondered, would the Canucks be able to crack the Kings? But sure enough, a goal late in the second period by Elias Pettersson, that set the stage for a back-and-forth third period that didn't yield any goals, so off to overtime they went. And JT Miller with the slapshot winner, 31st of the season, 1:36 into overtime, and the Vancouver Canucks avenge a 5-1 loss to the Kings last week. Yeah, the Kings get a single point, and that's important for them in their playoff chase. But for the Vancouver Canucks, it's all about the W's at this time of the year in Irf. This is win number 40 on the season for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, what a season. I mean, we've talked about it so much and so much on this show, Jeff, about the season that the Vancouver Canucks have been having. Number 40 and number 40 getting on the score sheet for the Vancouver Canucks as well, which we'll obviously get into it. And the one thing, you know, we ask people to talk to us, and you obviously seeing on the social channels, everyone wants to talk about the save.
Yeah.
The save heard around crypto.com arena, because it was marvelous.
Yeah, I think it was heard around crypto.com. It was heard all the way up here through the province of British Columbia. That's one for the highlight reels. And I mean, it truly was a game changer, because it's a 1-1 tie. The Canucks coming off a strong second period in which they outshot the Kings 16-9, and it kind of felt like they had found something to unlock that Los Angeles defense that was so hard to crack here last week and even through the first 20 minutes. But in the second, the Canucks continued to pour it on, wouldn't take no for an answer. Eventually, Elias Pettersson scores his 30th of the season, and that tied the game at 1. And then early in the third, the Kings had a couple of opportunities, but none better than Turcotte, 2-on-1 with Kopitar. Noah Juulsen sliding back, and Kopitar able to feather that puck cross. It looked like an absolute certainty that it was going to wind up in the back of the net. This is a podcast, but we're still standing. Standing ovation for Thatcher Demko. It was that good. I remember a save that he made on Wyatt Johnson when Dallas was here early in the season and a 2-0 victory, and that was massive. I think this one, given the stage, the circumstances, the opponent, this was a better save. Although that one off Johnston was incredible then, but absolute larceny from Thatcher Demko. And that's the difference maker that he can be and that he's going to have to continue to be for the Vancouver Canucks. Rested, didn't have to play on Sunday, so they gave him a little bit of time off, and he came back, he battled, and ultimately it's the top guns. It's Pettersson, it's Miller, it's Hughes with a couple of assists, 60 and 61 on the season. More on that a little bit later on. Brock Besser gets an assist on the Miller goal as well. And so, you know, people wondered, could the Canucks win a low-scoring, tight-checking affair? Could they beat one of these teams around them in the Pacific Division push? And would their best players show up? The answer, yes. You know, not a resounding win, but at the end of the night, it is a win. It's a pair of 2-1 victories in Southern California, but this was huge. They needed it. Again, the Oilers won 2-1 in overtime themselves in Boston when they were down with 90 seconds to play and somehow pulled that one out, and the Vancouver Canucks pull off a comeback win as well after giving up the first goal of this hockey game. So, yeah, lots of storylines here, but at the end of the night, this is a Vancouver team that is trying to distance itself from not only the Oilers, but the Vegas Golden Knights, who are reeling, and the Canucks are going to be in Vegas on Thursday. With the single point that LA gets for the overtime loss, they have caught the Vegas Golden Knights now, and that's something to watch as well, because we've been talking a lot about that 2-3 battle in the Pacific. Well, the Kings have announced that they want a piece of a Pacific Division playoff spot and had been playing well, beat the Canucks 5-1. They followed that up with a convincing 5-1 win over Jersey that led to the dismissal of Lindy Ruff, and you know, the Kings played their game here, but credit to the Vancouver Canucks for sticking with it, not getting discouraged, showing some patience, and ultimately, they do have more game breakers than the Los Angeles Kings. And looking at the goal scoring, I mean, Trevor Moore is the leading goal scorer for the LA Kings. Elias Pettersson and JT Miller both up over 30. Brock Besser leads this team in goals, but Pettersson and Miller, people, we're not telling them things that they don't know that follow the Vancouver Canucks. But ultimately, it was a couple of the Canucks. And we talked about Demko, we talked about Hughes. Canucks game breakers step up and come through and deliver the victory here.
Yeah, Miller, Demko, Hughes, Pettersson, those four. Right. I mean, you look at them last week when they played the LA Kings, Jeff, they essentially were no shows. Right. I mean, most of the team was, but you kind of look to them to take over the game a little bit. And in the second period, they did. I mean, Elias Pettersson, that goal was a great goal. Great finish by him being able to cut through the middle, changing the game there, obviously. But I was impressed with them all night. JT Miller in the faceoff circle was good again. Quinn Hughes, obviously doing Quinn Hughes things, just taking games over when he can. But you got to give a lot of credit to Thatcher Demko in this one as well. Obviously the save, making other key saves. I mean, Turcotte obviously looking to the heavens after he missed and larceny and whatever you want to call it. Yeah, it was dirty. It was nasty. It was absolutely robbery by Thatcher Demko. But beyond that, I think that kind of gave the Canucks a spark a little bit. Like when Demko's feeling it, and he's in a game early, I think the team plays a little bit differently in front of him. They know. They let him see the puck, he's going to stop it. And against the LA Kings in LA, it kind of felt like that a little bit.
We talk about the save off Turcotte, and that is the high watermark of this night, certainly for Thatcher Demko. Cam Talbot ended up being the busier of the goaltenders, even though it didn't look like it might be that way. The shots were 9-5 after 20 minutes of play, and you were left wondering, you know, at 1-0, you're okay, but if the Kings get that second one as they did here last week, that's when trouble really enters the equation. And so Demko did his part. The Canucks made sure that the Kings didn't get that second one, but they came close. It wasn't just Turcotte, because moments later, Trevor Lewis at the side of the net, he looked like he had a ton of daylight, and I don't know if he healed it, but it didn't look like he got everything on that and ended up hitting the side of the net. But on that same sequence, puck comes back to Drew Doughty, and he rang one off the post. So they came close, but close doesn't matter, because ultimately they get one, but that's all they get on this night. And then, I liked a lot of the second period where the Canucks outshot the Kings 16-9, kind of wore them down, broke through a little bit, but at 1-1, kind of went back and reverted to what we saw in that first period. They didn't do much through the first 12 minutes of the third period. But there was a sequence with about 5 minutes to go. JT Miller came down. They had numbers. Miller down the left side, pulls up, gets a shot. Ilya Mikheyev, of all people, Earth, is the guy fishing for a loose puck in front of the net. You probably know how that one ended. It didn't go in, spoiler alert. But then puck stays in the zone in front of the net, and Brock Besser out of a pile is able to pull the puck free, spins, and he fired it just wide and thought maybe Brock was going to be the hero. Again, he's out there 4-on-3, the delayed penalty, and sets up Miller for the winner. So he is, if he figures in the scoring and did his part there. And Elias Pettersson had a chance too with about 2 minutes to go, a wraparound. And we're seeing that a lot from him, almost a nightly basis, where once or twice tries to use the quick hands and just wrap that puck around. And Talbot made a nice stop there, but I thought a pretty decent opportunity for Elias Pettersson. So, you know, as I look through my notes here, again, this is in the night that my page is completely full, not like the 10-7 game in Minnesota, but the more I look at it, the more I see those top-end guys that we talk about. And, you know, in the first period when they scuffled a little bit, there was one chance. JT Miller had the puck off a face-off win in the offensive zone and was in a great position to shoot and whistled it just wide. And that was sort of one of the storylines early in this hockey game was, and it's a fine line at this level. I get it. Guys are trying to pick the top corners. But, you know, at the same time, you got to test the goalie and make him make some saves. And Miller whistled a grand opportunity wide of the net, and so Talbot wasn't even tested there. Was it Alan Vigneault that used to say, don't critique wins? We're in the business of doing that, though. I mean, the Canucks will take these 2 points and move on. You know, we said it after the Anaheim game, that they're going to have to find a way to elevate. They did at times in this hockey game. Like, in the second period, hands down, they were the better team. And if you look at the underlying numbers, they limited the Kings, according to the Natural Stat Trick, they limited the Los Angeles Kings to 3 high-danger chances this entire hockey game, 1 in each period. At the end of the night, the high danger zone were 14-3 in favor of the Vancouver Canucks. Now, having sat here with you and watched the game,
yeah,
you know, if I didn't know that statistic, I'm not sure that I would have pegged it at 14-3, but the 3 doesn't surprise me. Like, I do think defensively, and the Kings aren't gifted, and they're without Adrian Kempe right now, one of their better players. Canucks did a pretty nice job on Kevin Fiala, who had been red hot coming into this back-to-back 3-point games, including one here against the Canucks last week. And Fiala doesn't figure in the scoring. And I think he was the guy that was going to get the penalty in overtime. So anytime you can hold a guy who is holding the hot hand in checking off the score sheet, you've done well defensively. A pretty solid effort. I mean, ultimately, the Canucks beat the Kings at their own game.
Yeah, you mentioned 14-3, so it's 14-2, but then I don't really remember, because of the Demko save, that was one.
Yeah.
So you don't really remember the other two, to be completely honest, when you look at that game. And the Canucks definitely did have a lot. You mentioned Elias Pettersson, you let all Canuck forwards in ice time, you had 21-51, right? And like, a lot of talk about Elias Pettersson and in these parts and around the circles and kind of where his game's been and been a little bit off, been off. Well, the contract stuff's done. That's out of the water. You've already had a game. Now you're playing against some big boys here. And he came to play. And you could tell kind of this was one of the games where he asserted himself early by laying a hit. He was good in the faceoff circle again, and he was able to create chances. So he was, you know, obviously getting that goal, you know, +2 on the night as well. So I think that, you know, this team, I've said for a very, very, very long time, is going to go as far as Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes take them. You add JT Miller, you add Brock Besser, and you add, you know, Thatcher Demko into that mix. And if they are playing and firing on all cylinders like they can and have that consistency that they had in that second period, they can somehow bottle that up, Jeff, and be able to do that on 60-minute nights more often than not, then they're a problem for teams to play.
Well, let's go back to Pettersson's goal, because some good work down low, as we said, throughout that second period, they had started to assert themselves, spend longer shifts in the offensive zone, able to cycle the puck. And on that whole sequence, I don't know if you remember, Connor Garland lays out to poke a puck along the boards back to the point to extend a play to allow the Canucks to continue possession. And then from there, they work it around again. Hoglander gets the puck to Pettersson. And Elias Pettersson, who, look, we know he's got a wicked wrist shot. Cam Talbot's well aware of that. And he freezes the defense. It's Drew Doughty, but it's also Cam Talbot. And, you know, when Petey's on his game, he's one step ahead of everybody else. Yeah. I mean, the best ones in the league are that way, and, you know, sells the shot big time. That freezes the Kings, frees up a little bit of space to walk to the middle, and then snapped it home. So, you know, it's not a huge point night for Elias Pettersson, but I'm with you. I thought he dug in this hockey game, and ultimately he gave them the goal that they needed when they needed it. He needed that one. He had gone too long.
Yep.
Without scoring, it's his 30th of the season, so it's a big round number there. And the Canucks needed it as well to even the scoring and just to prove to themselves and to the Kings that they were going to get one at least on the night. Ultimately, they get two and they get the win. But big goal at a big time by a primetime player for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, from Elias to Elias, because Elias Lindholm on that was really good on the forecheck as well on that play. And obviously, we got to get into him a little bit, Jeff. Yeah. Left the first period early. And then obviously Twitter was set ablaze with what was going on and what has been happening and being talked about in these parts. And, you know, he ended up coming back. And, you know, I think it was a little bit of a mouth or facial type of injury, you know, maybe got stitched up, got a little bit of work done. But to be completely honest, Jeff, when he came back, he looked better.
Yes, I agree with you.
He looked like he was in the game. He was making hits. He was going in the net. He was doing the things that they got him for. So I don't know what they did in the room in that intermission and whatever, but he was very much so in the game after that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. You know, you look at the line combinations. Yeah. They came back with the same ones that they used the other night in Anaheim. So it was Pettersson out there with Hoglander and Suter, and then you get Miller and Besser. And again, the Ilya Mikheyev storyline, we're not going to get deep there, but it was another night where he didn't figure in the scoring and certainly didn't score a goal. And then you get a third line that has Lindholm. Garland, I thought, was a little more prominent in this game, back to what we've seen of him really for much of the season, but certainly the last couple of months. And you know, Vasily Podkolzin, mixed results there. The effort, no question, but in a tight game, doesn't even crest 10 minutes of ice time. Didn't see a lot of the ice in the third period. Not a surprise there. Tocchet hasn't had him, so you can understand that there isn't a ton of trust at this stage. And there are just other guys. I mean, he's short in the bench. DiGiuseppe didn't play a lot. He was under 10 minutes of time. I actually thought Sam Lafferty had some moments in this hockey game, using his speed, trying to get in on the forecheck. Had four hits in this game that tied for the team high along with Nikita Zadorov. And, you know, this close to the trade deadline, and I've made my opinion clear that I think if they can upgrade that fourth line, I think Rick Tocchet certainly would like that. But if Sam Lafferty can use his size and his speed effectively, and I thought this was a step in the right direction. It wasn't the dominant game for the fourth line. Thought it was interesting that the fourth line started for the Vancouver Canucks, and I think some of that was Tocchet didn't want to tip his hand and put out one of his scoring lines to, you know, give the Kings a chance to match right off the bat. So you start your fourth line and you see what happens. But also, when you start your fourth line, generally, if you're not John Tortorella and Bob Hartley, you're, you know, you're wanting those guys to get in and get the body early and sort of set the tone. I'm not sure that the Canucks fourth line did that in this hockey game, but I did notice Sam Lafferty. And so step in the right direction there. And Teddy Bluger bumped up when Podkolzin didn't play. We saw Bluger used a little bit more in some different situations in that third period. But I agree with you. You know, not a dominant game for Elias Lindholm, but there were moments where you can see, you know, the things that he can bring to this team if he makes it through the trade deadline after all the talk earlier in the day. A wild storyline from Chris Johnson was the first to report it. And, you know, we'll see where things go. I mean, the Vancouver Canucks have made it abundantly clear that, you know, they're going to be aggressive here. They're exploring every option. It would be something if they flip the guy that they picked up at the All-Star break, but he is a Canuck. But yes, when he leaves mid-game, is it Mike Camilleri a few years ago that left a game and ultimately was traded? Lindholm came back in this hockey game and 6-4 in the faceoff circle, so 60% on the draw. It was a good night for the Canucks in the circle. They went 64% of the team. JT Miller, a monster, going 14-7, but a good night for Elias Pettersson as well. He went 11-5. And one area that Lindholm didn't have to contribute, nobody did, for the second straight game, just one penalty. Second straight game, it was Noah Juulsen taking that one penalty. But look, Rick Tocchet has been on his team about cutting down the penalties, better discipline, and you saw it in Anaheim, you saw it here against the LA Kings. Not that the Kings boast a huge power play, but in a, you know, 1-0 game or even at 1-1, you don't want to give them those opportunities. So the Canucks had more power plays than the Kings did. They had back-to-back penalties. Quinton Byfield took a couple of penalties in the second period, tripping and hooking, and a missed opportunity for the Canucks on the second one there because Philip Deneau was without a stick.
Yeah.
And you thought, all right, here's an opportunity for this first unit for the Canucks to exploit that. We've seen them do it in the past. And generally, when a team is down a guy without a stick, I mean, essentially it's, you know, 3.5 penalty killers. He can try to get out there and clog some shooting lanes. But if you can work around him, it certainly exposes other areas. But they had some trouble controlling the puck. It cleared the zone, and Deneau was able to get to the bench and grab a new stick. So missed opportunity there. Special teams were a push, but I did like the fact that the Canucks seem to have turned a page here at the very least, and maybe it goes hand in hand with the fact that Tyler Myers has missed a couple of games. Whatever the case, they're staying out of the penalty box, and at this time of the year, I do think that's important.
Oh, it's probably one of the most important things, and you know that Rick's going to be happy about, or Tockett's going to be happy about that, obviously. Yeah, and it was the silly penalties, Jeff. It was you know, the high stick to the face, the tripping in your own zone, the putting the puck over the glass, that one as well. And, you know, to your point, it's in an important time now for them to realize this, that you can't take penalties. And yeah, I know the Kings power play isn't, you know, as crazy as, you know, the Canucks was early in the season or as good, but you just can't afford to go down a goal when the points are this important and the games are this tight. But I want to go back to your point about Sam Lafferty in that fourth line. And, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you would like to see them to try and improve that fourth line. You almost have to, like, by just by way of looking at it, this game was tight all the way through. And if you're going to have playoff type games and your opponent is rolling his fourth line, you need to be able to have some guys that you trust on that line to put out there. So just by that virtue, you almost have to think the Canucks have to do some sort of, you know, digging, or whether it's a trade, or whether they can figure out who actually fits on that fourth line to make it work, because you can't go into a third period of a playoff game, Jeff, tied 2-2 and not play your fourth line.
We knew that there would be a winner produced in this one because of overtime, and if not OT, then a shootout. But if this had been a playoff game, or if we may have been here for a while waiting for that next goal at 5-on-5, and you're right. I mean, those lengthy overtimes, and they don't have it all the time, but if you get on a playoff run and get a couple of series, pretty good chance that you're going to see an extended OT somewhere. I mean, you're asking your best players, top of the lineup guys, to do the heavy lifting, but they can't just stay out there the entire time. And that's where you need a fourth line you can trust, and one that you feel is going to be able to, you know, spend time in the offensive zone, wear down the defense, get the body, not get pinned in their own zone and give up scoring chances. And I still am not convinced that Rick Tockett thinks all that highly of the fourth line that he's got here. Now, you know, if and when Dakota Joshua gets back, and hopefully it's sooner rather than later, you know, that might push some pieces lower in the lineup and give them some different looks. But Joshua's not coming back before the trade deadline. So this is a management group that has to have a vision of what it wants, you know, how it can fit all these pieces in. The Phil Kessel situation remains out there as well. So I do expect that it's going to be an interesting and I think an active next 48 hours for the Vancouver Canucks. Now, we break it down from all angles here on Rinkwide. People that listen regularly, you know that. It's a good win for the Canucks. We've talked about that. Can we talk about the save by Demko? No, we could. We can talk about it all night long.
Okay, we can slow it right down.
But, you know, let's just go back to the first goal of the hockey game. Yeah. Trevor Moore is 24th from Deneau. And, you know, we saw this last week when the Kings were here, that it was the Canucks' top players that ran into some problems defensively. And here, it's easy to point to Phil Hronek because he's kind of the last guy that had a chance to break up the play before Moore's left all alone at the side of the net. Thatcher Demko can't stop them all. He stopped everything but the Moore goal ultimately. But there were breakdowns. And actually, it started JT Miller with an errant pass back into his own zone that kind of started the chain of events. The Canucks are running around there. Hronek has the puck in his skates, loses control, and ultimately Phil Deneau is able to slip it across to Moore, who wasn't going to miss from there. So not a great start to the hockey game. That was midway through the first period. Again, you're not going to play a perfect game. I get that. But you don't want to see sort of the Keystone Cop routine in your own zone, particularly from your top players.
No, absolutely not. I mean, their first period just wasn't good. Their third shot on net was almost 12 minutes into the hockey game. Yeah. Like, that just, it just, I mean, look, I understand who your opponent is, and the Kings held them to just three shots. The last time they played a tight checking game, that 1-3-1. But you know what? Teams are looking at that. And I think that you have to think bigger picture now. As much as there's this game and you get the win, but if teams are going to zone in on you and look to your weaknesses, one of them is the Canucks weren't able to break the Kings down very much, you know, in the first period and all of the last time they played against each other. There was plays that were where we watched, you know, where JT Miller won a faceoff, they get it back, and they just end up icing the puck again. And it's just one of those things where you look at, if you can't break out of your own zone, you're going to get scored on. The Kings don't have all that offensive firepower, but you go up against other teams down the stretch and you're going to run into some problems there. So it's also another thing of just being able to take care of the puck when you have it. First period obviously wasn't good. And then you had Lindholm go to the room, but they woke up, right? And I think that, that's a sign of a good hockey team, Jeff, is the way they woke up. The message was clearly delivered, whatever was said by either whether it was Talkett or whoever got up in there and said something, because in the second period, they were dominant, probably one of their better periods in weeks.
Yeah, and then it gets to overtime, and JT Miller, we've seen him work off that left side. In fact, against Boston, you know, he was the architect of the goal, setting up Brock Besser this time. Besser returns the favor. Besser down low at the side, kind of pops out. Back to Miller, leans into the slap shot, and Talbot got a piece of it. I mean, it snuck through. Doesn't have to hit the back of the net, just has to get across the goal line, and ultimately it did. Miller from Besser and Hughes at 1:36 on the delayed penalty, so it was 4-on-3, even though it's not officially a power play goal, but working with the man advantage, Canucks don't care if it's even strength, power play, 4-on-3, 3-on-3, yeah, whatever. 2-1 is really all that matters to the Vancouver Canucks. They defeat the Los Angeles Kings, and they back up the win in Anaheim. Now they get a chance to go into Vegas and go 3-for-3 on this road trip, and we'll spend a little bit more time later on previewing that game, because the Golden Knights, they were active on the trade front, but they're in a world of hurt right now. So the Vancouver Canucks do what they do and did what they had to do to get the victory out of crypto.com. They are 40-17-7 now on the season, up to 87 points, so creeping closer to 90 points and beyond. They matched the Edmonton Oilers. They gained ground on a team like the Winnipeg Jets, who fell 4-3 at home to the Seattle Kraken. Dallas with the crazy win of the night, 7-6 in overtime in San Jose. Kind of feel like we worked the wrong game, quite frankly. The Stars and the Sharks, not many saves there, but lots of goals and looked like lots of fun. Wyatt Johnston with a hat trick. I think he had five or 6 points on the night. Whatever the case, Dallas matches the Canucks, matches the Oilers with overtime victories there. So no real change at the top of the Pacific Division or the Western Conference. All right, lots still ahead here. We'll get inside the room as we always do. We'll have our rink-wide Vancouver 3 stars. A stat that stands out, just another mind-boggling statistic when it comes to Quinn Hughes, who we said was in on both Canuck goals here, played a ton, 28 minutes and 39 seconds of this hockey game, 9 more shot attempts. He and Hronek combined had 19 shot attempts. I mean, pretty clear the Canucks were trying to get those guys to deliver pucks to the front of the net, cause some chaos. So they were shooting and shooting a lot. Quinn Hughes had 9 attempts. 2 of them got to the net, and a couple of assists for him as well. So we'll get there. We'll get some listener feedback, and we'll preview the next stop on this gauntlet run. But a nice start for the Vancouver Canucks in this 4-game gauntlet against L.A., Vegas, Winnipeg, and Colorado. They beat the Kings by a score of 2-1. Just one quick thing that I do want to get to. Carson Soucy, at long last, back in the lineup, has been felled by 3 separate injuries, limited to just this is 22nd game of the season. Their win-loss record with him in the lineup is just off the charts. They've lost once in regulation the last 20 times that he has been in uniform. Again, not a lot of penalty killing. That was an area that I wanted to see. 58 seconds of penalty kill, but 18 minutes and 4 seconds. So, you know, they used him as you expect that they would with Tyler Myers out of the lineup. Certainly happy to have him back. And, you know, one of those nights where you don't notice him, but you say that as a good thing that, you know, was just able to step in and kind of find his game relatively quickly.
Well, it's also tough for him to find his game playing on the other side too, right? Because he had to play with Ian Cole, and we all know the troubles that Ian Cole's had of late. So, you know, that this game was, you mentioned it right there, is if you don't hear his name too much, that means he's doing something right. They didn't have to kill a lot of penalties, and, you know, he was able to go in there, and obviously probably good for him to be able to just feel the game. You know, playing over 18 minutes of ice time is obviously huge for a guy that hasn't played much at all this season. So, yeah, I'm interested to see, you know, how they move forward here, and if he does, in fact, go back to the other side. And obviously, you're going to have to see what happens when Tyler Myers gets back into the lineup, but all in all, it was a pretty good re-debut for Carson Soucy.
I would agree with you 100% there. They're happy to have him back, no doubt, and hopefully he'll, you know, just continue to settle in from here. And again, it's not going to get a whole lot easier here over the next week with the opponents that the Canucks have coming at them. Vegas is up next on Thursday. 2-1, the Canucks pull out an overtime victory in Los Angeles. Jeff and Irv with you here on Rinkwide Vancouver. Canucks forced to work a little overtime, not that much overtime, 1:36, the official time of the JT Miller winner from Besser and Hughes with a 4-on-3 OT goal. You're going to hear from Miller, you're going to hear from Elias Pettersson, but we'll Start with the head coach, as we so often do here on Rinkwide. All of our post-game audio clips, a presentation of Mr. Lube, 100% Canadian, pioneers of the no-appointment oil change, and now providing tire service and sales. No appointment needed there either. 16 locations in the Lower Mainland for one near you. Go to MrLube.com. One of the storylines, Irv, throughout this night was the Vancouver Canucks got soundly beaten by the LA Kings a week ago, and so they didn't have to wait long to get an opportunity for revenge. We talked about it, kind of started slowly. Some adjustments made in that second period. Rick Tocchet was asked after the game what the Canucks did better in this game to produce the victory than last week against the Kings.
Well, I think when we did chip it in, or you know, there's not a lot of room, we got to the pucks quicker. You know, I think that's a will. I don't think it's a system thing. I think we just have more will than we had the last time we played them of getting those loose pucks. I thought we came up with more battles, more territory, obviously. You know, Talbot played good. I mean, they're good at boxing out. So there's a lot of shots at the net.
Oh, there you go. Doesn't sound all that complicated. More will, more battles won. But he did like the way that they attacked sort of in that second period and started to get the momentum behind them.
Well, that's the way that we talked about the game as well. I mean, they were on them. You know, after that first period wasn't a disaster. I mean, you go down and, you know, you end up trying to come back and win this hockey game. But like I said, probably one of their better periods in that second. They forechecked well, they drew penalty, and they created chances, and then they ended up getting rewarded.
Yeah, scored the only goal of the second, outshot the Kings 16-9, and that set the stage for the Thatcher Demko save that we've talked about. What did the coach think about his goaltender's heroics?
Unreal save. I mean, that's a 10-beller. I mean, that's a highlight one. That'll be on tonight and probably all month. That's big-time save for us at the crucial time.
A 10-beller, yeah. And we'll all see it on highlight reels through the night, through the day, and as he said, probably for the month. I mean, it was that good, and in a one-all tie, I had resigned myself to the fact that that puck was going in the net. Like, Kings had the lead. Oh, no, they didn't. The save was that good. And so that allowed the Canucks to keep on pushing here. They get the game to overtime, delayed penalty, and, you know, it really doesn't matter. It's bookkeeping, because it doesn't go into the books as a power play goal, but with the extra attacker, it's 4-on-3. It's the same look that you're getting with the man advantage in overtime, and they, you know, had the guys on the ice that they wanted. Miller was out there with Besser, Quinn Hughes, get EP40 out there, and Canucks able to work the puck down low, back up high, and JT Miller with the slap shot. He wins it. Here's Miller talking about the sequence that led to his winning goal.
Yeah, I mean, we have a handful of plays against the 4-on-3. We scored an overtime a couple of weeks ago on one of them. And, you know, on the first time I rolled, you know, it's kind of just to see which way they're positioned. And they were out pretty far. So, you know, we have another option and we kind of yelled the other option. And, you know, not lucky, but, you know, nice to see it work out.
Well, he referenced the game against Boston. Yep. We talked about that, too. He elected to pass then. He had Besser in front. This time, Besser had popped out to the side, so put it in his wheelhouse. And JT makes no mistake, his 31st goal of the season. He gets the winner. The Canucks take 2 points off the Los Angeles Kings. But it doesn't happen if Elias Pettersson doesn't get them back on even terms. With about 3.5 to go in the second period, this was Elias Pettersson after the game just talking about the patience that his team showed and the need to stick with it against the Kings.
We talked about the way we want to play, and I think both teams play well. Play good defensively, but I liked our effort the whole game. We stuck with it. Still, gave him a few looks, definitely in the third, and then Demmer made another highlight save. So.
And again, it all tracks back to Thatcher Demko. Another nod for Demmer from EP40 there at the end. But big guns come through for the Vancouver Canucks, and they beat the Kings by a score of 2-1 in overtime. The post-game audio here on Rinkwide is brought to you by Mr. Lube. All right, to the Rinkwide Vancouver 3-star selection. Again, you don't see this often on the road, especially in a tight game like one. Like, absolutely could have gone with both goaltenders and Miller as the game-winning goal. Quite often, that's the formula they use, you know, when a game goes to overtime, whatever the case. Clean sweep for the Vancouver Canucks. I'm not sure who was selecting the 3 stars at Crypto.com, but JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, Thatcher Demko in that order, and I'm good with that because, again, we talk about Canucks' best players. Like, sure, Quinn Hughes, 2 assists, you know, you could have put him in there, but somebody's coming out, and whatever the case, best players took over for the Vancouver Canucks. That's the story here. And Quinn Hughes, I don't think, will lose a lot of sleep not being selected as a three-star either in the building or here on rinkwide. But we'll give him a hearty honorable mention for the amount that he played, the role that he played. But I'm down with going with Miller, Pettersson, and Demko as the three stars here on rinkwide Vancouver.
Yeah, you mentioned those four guys, and those are the core four that came to play, right? And yep. And I think on more nights than not, if those four can play, you know, just as good or half as good as they did against the LA Kings, the Canucks are going to have no trouble finding success. Interesting, you know, you mentioned it's not going to count as a power play goal, but it should be a power play goal. The Canucks should take a page out of their own overtime power play and insert it into their actual power play on games sometimes, because they're able to find space. I know it's one extra player and things like that, but they're always able to find those spaces in the overtime period. So you'd like to see them try to figure out and do it during the actually during the game where they it's a 5-on-4.
Yeah, power play went 0-for-2 on the night officially, both in the second period, and it didn't look great. So that continues to be a work in progress, but you know what? They'll move on to Vegas another day and a chance to work on that. And they'll take on the Golden Knights on Thursday. More about that. We'll also have our staff that stands out. It's an incredible one. Involves Quinn Hughes. And we'll get to some listener feedback as well. See what you, the loyal listeners of Rinkwide Vancouver, had to say about a 2-1 overtime victory. A come-from-behind win as well for the Vancouver Canucks over the Los Angeles Kings. Jeff and Irf with you. This is Rinkwide Vancouver. Going to get to some listener feedback here on Rinkwide in a sec. I'm distracted, still running through that Thatcher Demko save. In my mind, I know we've referred to it a number of times. Probably we'll talk about it the rest of the season and through the summer months as well when we look back at some of the highlights from this Vancouver Canucks season. Speaking of highlights, Quinn Hughes produces them on a nightly basis. Again, another busy night for the captain, another good night for the captain. And, you know, two more assists for him. His 60th and 61st of the season. Regular listeners know that we get to a stat that stands out at this portion of each and every postgame podcast. And this one is courtesy of the National Hockey League, Irf, when they saw it, when they posted it after his first assist that got him to 60 for a third straight season. Like, I was just left shaking my head. Like, it was an almost nightly basis back in November when he was doing crazy things and was, you know, leading the NHL, not just defenseman, in scoring. And they were coming up with these statistics. But this is from the National Hockey League public relations arm. Quinn Hughes assisted on a Canucks goal for the 60th time this season and achieved a rare feat in the process. He became the fourth blue liner in NHL history with three straight 60-assist seasons, joining Bobby Orr, who did it 6 times, Ray Bourque, who did it 5 times, and Paul Coffey, who did it 5 times, and then again did it 3 more times along the way. So Coffey has done it 8 times, but broke it up in 5 and 3. Bobby Orr with 6. And Paul Coffey, Bobby Orr, Ray Bourque, period. That's the list. And now Quinn Hughes.
It's absurd. Like, I mean, what more can you say about this kid, right? It's unbelievable just the things that he's been doing. And he's, you know, obviously breaking all sorts of records, not only in the franchise, but doing things at a historic level when it comes to the National Hockey League and its league history. 73 points on the season. He's ahead of Cale Makar, obviously, in that. You know, he's got 12 goals, so he's tied for 8th among defensemen right now. Yossi's got 15. But yeah, again, the 61 assists, it's crazy. Like, the Norris Trophy race is going to be interesting because Cale Makar probably, I mean, he might catch Quinn Hughes and beat him in points, but, you know, it's the league's best defenseman. Like, I mean, if you're doing it by points, then what they did last year with Erik Karlsson, he definitely wasn't the league's best defenseman. Like, Quinn Hughes kind of does it. He does it on both ends of the ice.
Yeah.
I mean, so does Cale.
It was funny because ESPN has been doing sort of quarterly reviews, polling anonymous voters, people that, you know, have votes, members of the Professional Hockey Writers. And there was one guy, or one person, I don't know who, man or woman, that suggested that, again, that Cale Makar plays big minutes in all situations and that somehow Quinn Hughes and his penalty-killing usage is going to work against him. But, look, I thought he was good the other night in Anaheim. I thought he was as good against a better opponent on a night where he's in on both Canuck goals. He just tilts the ice in the Canucks' favor. And I think these last couple of games have been a huge step forward. Because kind of like Petey, he had been quiet since the All-Star break. Quiet by his standards. And this was a night where his fingerprints are on both goals. And they end up winning 2-1. I mean, you can't ask for a whole lot more from a guy that's playing 28 and a half minutes. So just incredible, the company that he's keeping in the NHL record book. So that is absolutely a stat that stands out. Lots of you want in on feedback here at Rinkwide Van, and we love to hear from you. John says, second period, best in a long time, great coaching adjustment dealing with the Kings 1-3-1. Yeah, there was a lot of talk about 1-3-1 and how were they going to break it down, and they didn't the other night. They didn't through the first 20 minutes. So, yeah, I think some credit to the coaching staff for trying to figure things out. Whatever they did in that second period, the ice slanted in the Canucks' favor. They outshot them 16-9, and that's where they got the goal that got them back on even terms and allowed them ultimately to win this hockey game by a score of 2-1. Ryle says, took over the game and stuck with it. You know, Rick Tocchet's been talking for a while about needing to be comfortable in these scoreless games or 1-1 games or when you're down 1-0 and not getting frustrated. And, you know, the Boston game here not that long ago, they were down 2-0 in the third period. And Tocchet talked a lot at length, in fact, after the game about bench was calm. Guys like JT Miller were, you know, just stick with it, stick with it. I think this is another exercise that, you know, obviously it produces the win, but I think it's also, you know, it produces something that they can take with them moving forward here the next time. And they're going to, whether it's down the stretch here, whether it's next week or into the playoffs, they're going to find themselves down 1-0 in hockey games. You're not going to score first every single night. A game can't be over at 1-0. It just can't. I mean, this one felt like it might have been a little while. Third time this year, by the way, that the Canucks have solidified at least a point with only one goal. Now, ultimately, they got the second goal that they needed, and they won. But the 1-0 win in Buffalo, and they lost 2-1 in a shootout in Minnesota just before Christmas. So in regulation time, one goal in each of those games. But ultimately, these low-scoring games, those were games they couldn't win last year because they were giving up 3 and 4 and 5 and knew that they needed 5 or 6 to win. They've been better this year. And Demko, I think, is a huge part of that. But they have found a way to grind out some victories, and they've done it here on back-to-back nights now in Anaheim and against the Los Angeles Kings. Hassan says, Pettersson looked like himself for the first time in a long time. Yeah, I mean, we touched on that a little bit earlier, but step in the right direction. You know, even if his name isn't all over the score sheet, doing things, playing the right way, winning his battles. Gabriel says, found a way to beat a notorious 1-3-1. Love seeing the Canucks keep pushing and able to come back from tough playing styles, which is what they can expect come playoff time. Great patience by the team and awesome to see the top players show up. We covered most of those talking points in the opening segment. John says, got to be Thatcher Demko's biggest takeaway. What a save. I can't talk about it enough. The time of the game, you know, just how spectacular. I thought Alex Turcotte honestly might just take his skates off and go home. I don't know how you come back from that. The save was that good. Knuckles, huge effort. Kept working, didn't lose their composure. Yeah. Trevor says, if you sit back and don't forecheck, it makes hockey more boring than soccer. The Kings are not artistically all that pleasing. They know who they are as a team. They've got a style that works for them. And look, 4 out of 7, they're going to be tough to break down. They will. Whoever they face, however this all shakes down in the Pacific Division, if they stay ahead of Vegas and are in that 2-3 battle, if they drop back down, they're a wild card team, whatever the case, they've got some nice pieces, but more than anything, they've got an identity. I wouldn't want to pay 41 times a year as a season ticket holder there, but you know, it's worked for them. They've won more than they've lost, and they're going to be a playoff team.
Rick Tocchet said before last week's game against the LA Kings, Jeff, he said that you have to be comfortable in your own skin playing against them because that's who they are. Playing like that, they're comfortable with that. We've seen teams in the past play like that quite often against the Vancouver Canucks and around the league. It's boring, right? For lack of a better word, it is boring hockey, but it's effective for them. And for the Vancouver Canucks, maybe in the first period, they weren't comfortable in their own skin, but in the second period, they were. I think they kind of figured it out themselves, and they kind of went back to what their identity was, and that was being that forechecking team, a team that draws penalties, a team that's able to, you know, get on you a little bit there. So that's a positive sign for me when you look at this team. You know, they didn't just roll over. They actually went back, you know, took a break in the intermission and said, this isn't us. Let's play like us, and we can beat this team.
The fans in LA, and I mean, it was Staples Center then, now it's Crypto.com. Obviously, they were treated to two incredible playoff runs a decade ago that resulted in two Stanley Cups, and that building was rocking. But with this team playing the style that it does, like, the fans didn't have much to cheer about. They weren't, like, I didn't think they were a factor really in this hockey game.
Yeah.
Yeah, they scored 5 the other day against the Devils, and they looked like they were having fun then. But, you know, come playoff time, I'm sure it will ramp up. But I do think that maybe that was a little bit of a factor in that this wasn't a terribly hostile environment the Canucks found themselves in. And ultimately, everybody kind of nodded off for some stretches of this night. But in the end, the Canucks came through. And Andy says, best player showed up. And we'll just leave that as the final response from our inbox here at Rinkwide Van. Yes, Surf and I both agree on that. And they're going to need more of that. And hopefully for, you know, Elias Pettersson with the contract out of the way and getting a goal here. And he and Hoglander continuing to find some chemistry. You know, these are steps in the right direction, and they're going to have to continue to step up into Vegas, at home to Winnipeg, Colorado next week as well. So lots of the big boys in the Western Conference directly ahead for the Vancouver Canucks. And Thursday's going to be, it'll be fun. It's the first trip for the Canucks into Vegas this season. They got schooled by the Golden Knights back on November 30th, 4-1, outshot by a 2-1 margin. Vegas was clearly the better team. And that was when the Canucks were sort of coming out of that November little mini fog where they alternated a lot of wins and losses and didn't lose a whole lot after that. But that night, the Stanley Cup champs sort of, they flexed their muscles and they were the better team then. So curious to see Canucks now with a little bit of momentum, a little bit of confidence, best players playing well. Going into Vegas, they acquire Anthony Mantha from Washington. Yeah. You know, didn't give up a lot to get him. You know, can generate some offense, certainly. I mean, pretty one-dimensional guy, but you know what you're getting with him, and they're bringing him in to score some goals. I would assume he'll make his debut on Thursday, but he's joining a Vegas team, Irv, that got thumped by Columbus at the end of a road trip. Last night, the coach, not happy. Bruce Cassidy basically sounding like Rick Tocchet from the last couple of weeks here with the Vancouver Canucks and questioning some of his best players. You know, what's really interesting with me about this Vegas team, and they got Jack Eichel back the other night, so they're getting a little bit healthier. They're without Mark Stone. But if people remember, they got off to an 11-0-1 start to the season. And people were like, what cup hangover? Like, look at them go. Since the 12-game mark, they've played 50 games. So they've played 62 on the season. They are 22-22-6 the last 50 games. NHL 500. They've been caught by the LA Kings. Like, there's no guarantee that the Cup champs are going to be in the playoffs. Like, if they fall into the wild card, I think they will be.
Me too.
And let's see what happens at the deadline, because we know that they have pulled rabbits out of hats before and certainly worked the salary cap to their advantage and LTIR and everything else. But they're a gettable bunch. And when I look at what's ahead for the Canucks, they can only focus on the next one, and that is Vegas. But quite frankly, right here, right now, I think Winnipeg probably poses a bigger challenge in Colorado next week as well, but the Canucks can't look past those teams. They've got to have their sights set on running the table on this quick 3-game road trip and continuing to, you know, pad points in their point total and put those in the back pocket and then come on home for the start of that 9-game homestand. I mean, Vegas still has a lot of very nice component parts, but whatever reason, if it's sort of what the Canucks have been through here of late as well, dog days, you know, not just quite locked in to focus on the stretch run, but Vegas just doesn't have its good stuff right now.
Yeah, then maybe a little bit of an identity crisis too, because of all the guys that are being injured on that team, right? Yeah. Guys coming in out of the lineup all the time. You don't really know who's playing where, who's your number one guy, who's your number two guy. At least they got Eichel back now. Eichel and William Karlsson will be their top two centers. And, you know, if Mark Stone does end up coming back at some point, if they make the playoffs, you know, that's obviously a boost for them. But it's going to be interesting, because I'm pretty sure that Kyle Dubas has set a deadline before the deadline about Jake Guentzel. So it's going to be really interesting to see if, you know, by this time we're doing this again on Thursday, Jeff, we're going to be talking about one of those teams having Jake Guentzel, either Vancouver or the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yes, we'll be back to do this again. Not the most exciting hockey game, but end of the night, a win is a win for the Vancouver Canucks, and they need all the wins they can get right now. They're 40th of the season, 87 points, JT Miller in overtime after Elias Pettersson had even the game at 1. Trevor Moore opens the scoring for the Los Angeles Kings. 2-1 is the final. The Canucks over the Kings. 2 games down head-to-head and 2 still to come. The Kings will be here in late March. The Canucks will be back in Los Angeles in early April. So get used to seeing a fair bit of the Kings and maybe more come playoff time. But on this night, the Vancouver Canucks, a goal better, needed overtime, but they win it by a score of 2-1. For Earth, this is Jeff. Thanks so much for listening to another edition of Rinkwide Vancouver.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.